my kind of town, Chicago is.
I grew up in Peoria, the son of Betty Ann and Eddie McMurray. My mother and father had Frank Sinatra playing constantly at our house. I know the words to most of Frank's songs because I grew up listening to all of them. Tom Dreesen opened up for Frank Sinatra and toured with the Chairman for 13 years. Tom is a longtime friend, and he's doing a show via Zoom on Saturday, May 9th. You can go to themanwhomadesinatralaugh.com for all the information. Let's say hello to Tom Dreesen. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing fine, Pete. And who was that singing? Was that you in the background?
I love his
two songs, you know, My Kind of Town, Chicago, and, of course, Chicago. But when I opened for him around the country, he would sing that song. But there was nothing more exciting than being at the Chicago Theater.
Oh, yeah.
And when he would, I would do my show, and they'd take an intermission. And then he would walk out with no introduction at all at the Chicago Theater, sold-out house. He'd walk out to center stage at Peaver Chin, and he'd look all around the crowd, and with no orchestra, he'd go, "This is my kind of town, Chicago is." And the people would go wild. They'd cheer. It was so exciting to be with him in Chicago. You know?
You toured with this guy for 13 years. It's one of my biggest regrets. I was too young to go see Frank Sinatra. I remember our family pulled together money, and we finally sent my mother and father to see him at the Chicago Theater late in his career, and it made my mother's life. Loved it.
Did she mention anything about the opening act? Did she say?
I will have to ask her about that. No, she is a big fan of yours. We've talked about that.
No, I'm being facetious. It was, by the way, not to, this cheap plug, but what I'm doing on May 9th at 5 p.m. Central Pacific time, which would be 7 in Chicago, it's answering these questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not actually doing my show on Zoom. I mean, they're going to Zoom into me. And I've got all kinds of questions that people have been sending in that I've got in front of me, all kinds of questions about Frank. And I'm going to answer these questions. I'm going to tell, there's questions like, how did you meet him? How did you get the job? Did he ever mention this? Did he ever mention that? And some real interesting questions that people are asking. So that's what I'm going to be doing, answering those questions, you know.
Well, I'm going to ask you a few questions on the air because that was my first question, because I don't know how you and Frank met. And I don't want to give too much up because I know you're going to be discussing this, but was it through a mutual friend on the golf course?
Yeah, it was on the internet. We were both looking for a date.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra looking for a date, please.
by the way, that's one of the questions. I'm looking at my notes. I wish that people are sending in, but somebody said, somebody wrote in a real interesting question about that. Oh, he said that Frank Sinatra had many lovers. Oh, a guy named Carmine from Philadelphia said Frank Sinatra had many. He dated some of the most beautiful women in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever? And he said, "I want you to be honest now. Sitting up with him till 4 or 5 in the morning, drinking that Jack Daniels. Did he ever get loose and tell you which woman he thought was the greatest lover?" And I said, "I'll answer that question May 9th. Go to The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh, and I'll answer that question, you know." So, and to go back to what you're saying, how we got together, is that I was touring, you know, I was doing the Tonight Shows and doing a lot of TV and everything, and I was touring with Sammy Davis for 3 years and touring with different artists, and I was touring with Smokey Robinson, and we were appearing at Harrah's in Lake Tahoe, Caesar's in Lake Tahoe, and Frank was appearing at Harrah's. And so after my show one night, I shot over to Harrah's, didn't even change out of my stage clothes, and I ran over there to catch his show. And as I was running into the showroom, the vice president of Harrah's Hotel was out in front of the showroom, a guy named Holmes Hendrickson, and he was standing with the big heavyset guy with a cigar. And he called me over. He said, "Tommy, come here." And I went over there, and he said, "Tommy, this is Mickey Rudin." And I recognized the name. That was Frank Sinatra's lawyer, a real powerful guy in Hollywood. And he said, "Mr. Rudin," he said, "Mickey, this is Tom Dreesen, and I think Tom would make a great opening act for Frank Sinatra." And the lawyer got a pained expression on his face like he heard that a million times, and he winked at the vice president, but I caught the wink, and he said to me, "Hey, kid, if I gave you a week with Frank, would you want more than $50,000? I said, "Mr. Rudin, put it this way, if you gave me a week with Frank, would you want more than $50,000? He said, "Hey, I like this kid," and he started laughing. And then a week later, they gave me 1 week with Frank in the Atlantic City. They gave me a call. Mm-hmm. Would I do a week with Frank in Atlantic City? And I thought, yeah, I'll get my... I'll go and I'll get my picture taken, try to hang it in every bar back in Chicago, you know, and that would be it. But the second night I was with him, he took me out to dinner, he and his wife Barbara, and I can remember like it was yesterday, in the middle of the meal, he set his knife and his fork down, and he said to me, I like your material, and I like your style. I'd like you to do a few other dates with me if you're interested. And I didn't say, let me check my calendar. I said, yeah. And it turned into almost 14 years of 45, 50 cities a year. And just the greatest experience for any comedian to grace the same stage with Frank Sinatra. You know, walking out in front of 20,000 people in huge arenas. Right. And in Hawaii, 40,000 people out there in Hawaii. It was so exciting to do that, you know.
Well, the chairman of the board, I mean, paint a picture for me. And you've talked about this with me on WGN. After the shows, Frank would like to hang out with his guys. And he would get a table. And he would ask his guys, but it was more of a demand, wasn't it? You needed to show up after the show and hang out with Frank.
Well, you didn't have to. You know, if you didn't want to, you didn't have to if you had something else to do. But people would say to me, Tom, tell the truth. It's Frank's world and you live in it. I said, yeah, but that isn't a bad world to live in.
Right.
You're making it sound like that's it. You know, to hang out with Frank till 5, 6 in the morning. There were nights at his compound, when I stayed at his compound, think about.
Oh, boy.
Pete, you're from Peoria, and I'm from Harvey.
Yeah.
Okay, I had eight brothers and sisters. We lived in a shack. Five of us slept in one bed. We were raggedy poor. I shined shoes in tavern set pins in bowling alleys. You know, going to the Harvey Theater as a little boy. Now I'm sitting in Frank Sinatra's compound at 3 o'clock in the morning with Gregory Peck, Kirk Douglas, Frank Sinatra, Clint Eastwood, Robert Wagner, Isaac Stern, Alan Shepard, the first man in space.
Right.
And you know, so hanging out wasn't a chore. It was a joy.
I'm sure it was wonderful.
Hearing, just sitting and being with Frank, by the way, the stories he would tell. And, you know, and again, he never went to bed till the sun came up. When the sun came up, that's when he went to bed. And he was a hangout guy. He loved hanging out. And Chicagoans are like that. We like hanging out, you know, and telling stories. And just, you know, it was a joy for me. It really was.
Tell me about hanging out with Frank in Chicago. Where did you guys go? Did you go to Jilly's, Rush Street?
Gibson Steakhouse was the place we went. Or what we would do, he always stayed at the Ambassador East. Always stayed at. Now it's just called the Ambassador. But he always stayed there, and we'd hang in the pump room. They would shut the place down, and the bartender would stay on duty. And there was a back booth. And if you go to the pump room to this day, in that far back booth in the pump room is a booth with a picture of Frank in it. And it's where Frank and all of us hung out till dawn. You know, and that's what we'd go to Gibson's, have something to eat. Gibson's was always one of his favorite places to eat. And then after that, we would hang out in the pump room till dawn, you know.
And if he had to make a phone call, they would bring the phone with the long wire all the way over to your table?
Oh, yeah, in those days, yeah, they would do whatever, you know. I mean, if you know, Frank tipped $100. If you brought Frank a Jack, that was his drink, Jack and a Splash, you know, Jack Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought him a drink, he'd slip the guy $100. If you bought him a pack of cigarettes, he'd slip you $100. So if Frank raised his hand to, like, scratch his ear, four waiters would trip over one another trying to get to him, you know.
Oh, my gosh. And you always told me that Dean Martin always wanted to go home early. He didn't stay out late. It was always a facade because he was a big golfer and wanted to get up early in the morning.
Yeah, and Dean did what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it. He listened to nobody, you know. He and nor Frank. I mean, much as he loved Frank, if Dean didn't want to do it, he didn't do it. And he was his own man. And to be honest with you, the toughest guy of that group always was Dean Martin. You know, they always talked about Frank being a tough guy, and he was a scrapper maybe. But Dean boxed as under the name of Kid Crescetti. That was his real name, Dino Crescetti. And he boxed when he was a kid, and he had big hands. He didn't take a whole lot of lip from anybody. You know.
The Dean Martin roasts. I'm sure you were on those roasts, right?
Yeah, I did. I did a couple of them. Yeah.
I mean, there's no way that content could air on TV today. But was Dean drinking, or was that fake drinking?
No, he a lot of people. Dean did drink, by the way, but. If you're too young, but there was a comedian named Joey Lewis. In fact, Frank played him in the movie The Joker is Wild. Joey Lewis was a notorious drinker, drank 24/7. In fact, it was Joey's line that I feel sorry for people who don't drink. When you wake up in the morning, that's as good as you're going to feel all day. You know, and Dean used that line all the time. But Dean was like a copy of that. Dean liked pretending that he was drunk because he could get away with a lot of things if you do that. You know, if you're Kirk, they thought, oh, he had a few drinks. But did Dean drink? Yeah, he drank. He drank a little bit. He sure did, you know.
Tom Dreesen on the phone with us. Tom, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to have you hold on. I want to ask you about David Letterman and a few other things about Frank Sinatra, okay?
Great.
Tom will be on the Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh.com is the information. You can go there on Saturday, May 9th. He'll be on Zoom telling Sinatra stories. It's 720 WGN. This week on Chicago's Best, it's Chicago's Best Meet Lovers tonight at 10:30 on WGN TV.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
On the phone with us, our old friend Tom Dreesen. It is Saturday, May 9th, the Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh.com. You can find all the information on there. Tom's going to be telling stories about Frank. Got a text in. Was Frank the first non-sport related event at the United Center, Tom? Does that ring a bell?
You know, he was there, you know, but I'm not sure if it was the first. That's a good question. I'm not sure if it was the first non-sporting event. But, you know, years ago, there was a guy that put all that in action for him, where they start doing arenas, you know, when he did the main event. You know, all of a sudden, entertainers start doing sports arenas, mm-hmm. you know, rather than theaters, you know. And it really was exciting, you know, because what you do, you put the stage in the center of the basketball arena, and then everybody's in the round, you know. And that's why one of the reasons why I was able to stay with Frank Sinatra as long as I did, because a lot of comedians could not do that. You're used to working with the audience in front of you, what they call proscenium.
Right, right.
Know? But in the round, you got to work like you're in your living room, and people are all around you, and you're in the middle of your living room, and you're talking to all of them. So your back is going to be to some of them. And so it's a very difficult procedure for a stand-up comedian, but it's better if you're a monologist. Because if you're a monologist, then when you hit that punchline, even if my back is to you, you can hear that punchline.
Right.
As opposed to where your facial expression or an impression you were doing, you know, relied on the look on your face. So a monologist like me, we're able to, you know, you're able to make that transition easier. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult task, you know.
You and I met in 1998 when I first came to Chicago. I was doing my show from Las Vegas, and I'll never forget this moment, and it's just ingrained in my memory. I'm doing my show at the MGM, and Tom Dreesen comes walking up with Mannix.
Yeah, Chuck Connors.
Yes, and that
Not
day...
Not Chuck Connors, I mean Mike Connors. Mike Connors.
You come walking up with Mike Connors, and that day we met, and you made me feel like I was your best friend. You have an ability to... It's when you talk to someone, you seem like you've known them forever. I mean, you have a gift. You really do.
I'm humbled by your remark. I appreciate that. But again, I had... 8 brothers and sisters. I grew up in a very humble background, you know, mm-hmm. shining shoes in taverns, setting pins in bowling alleys, caddying in the summer, helping to feed my brothers and sisters. And I think if you're raised that way,
right.
you know, it just never seems to leave you. You know, I remember Smokey Robinson one time, he was being interviewed on Entertainment Tonight, and the guy said, he was talking about how he ran marathons with me. Smokey came to Chicago and ran 26 miles with me for my charity there every year. And the guy in Entertainment Tonight said, how long have you known Tom Dreesen? He said, my whole life. And he said, really? I thought you were from Detroit and Tom's from Chicago. He said, no, I know that. But sometimes you meet people and you feel like after you've been with them 24 hours, you feel like you've known them all your life.
Right.
And that's the way I feel about Smokey, and that's the way I feel about certain people. When you meet them, you feel like, hey, you know, we must have known each other our whole lives because we just immediately click and get along together, you know.
Is that what happened with you and Frank when you sat down for dinner with his wife? Did it click right away?
No question about it. When I think about it, you know, Frank was from Hoboken. He was a kid from Hoboken, and I'm a kid from Harvey. He had certainly his talent was 20 times more enormous than me, but he had a daughter, a son, and a daughter. I had a daughter, a son, and a daughter. He's half Sicilian. I'm half Sicilian. He once said, you know, he grew up in the streets. His mom and dad had a tavern and a saloon, and I shined shoes in all the saloons. So we had like a camaraderie from the start.
Mm-hmm.
he once told the guy from the New York Times, the guy said, why do you keep Tom Dreesen with you? He said, you mean besides the fact that he's funny? He said, yeah, besides that fact. And Frank said, if I'm a saloon singer, and I am, then Tommy's a saloon comedian. By that, I mean we're just a couple of neighborhood guys. And I've always treasured that remark, you know.
Right.
Because that's what I thought when I was alone with him. He was the great Frank Sinatra, no question about it. But when you're alone with him and no one was around and he had a little jack in a splash, we were just two guys from the neighborhood talking like two guys from the neighborhood, you know.
Right. What was it with Frank and Ava Gardner? He was so infatuated with her, and she just couldn't give him all her love.
Well, we don't have enough time for me to tell you some of the stories, but that was really one of the passionate times of his life. He once told me in a car, we were riding around in a car, and we were talking about love songs and how he approached love songs, you know, that you felt the love and the pain and all that. And he said, you know, you fall in love differently at different times in your life because you evolve as a human being, you mature. And so the way you would fall in love at 17, his first wife, Nancy, is not the way you'd fall in love at 30. Ava. And the way you fall in love at 50, Mia, is not the way you'd fall in love at 60, Barbara. You know, I mean, these, you know, you mature and you, and
right.
You, and so, but Ava, he was vulnerable at that time. And he was so deeply, madly, crazily in love with her, crazy in love with her that when she left him, he was suicidal. It crushed him. And all you have to do is go to a song called I'm a Fool to Want You and listen to the lyrics and listen to Frank sing that song. And that's his, he went in and re-recorded that after she left him and listened to the lyrics.
Wow.
Pity me, I need you, you know.
Wow, man. And Tom, you and David Letterman, very close. You were one of Dave's favorite guests. You're a guy that picks up the phone. Have you talked to Dave lately?
I talk to him all the time. And I have to tell you, one of my favorite David Letterman stories, he called me the other day, Pete, and he says, you know what, Tom, every time I do an interview or you do an interview and they ask how we met, we always tell the same story. And it's a true story. I was a new comedian, and Dave pulled up with his red pickup truck from Indianapolis. He was at the Comedy Store for his first time. He pulled up in front of the Comedy Store. He saw me perform. When I came off stage, he's in the parking lot. He said, I really enjoyed your set. My name is Dave Letterman. I said, oh, Dave, where are you from? Indianapolis. And I started talking, and we became friends ever since. Now, I said, yeah. He said, well, it's a boring story. I said, well, that's how we met. He said, I don't care if it's boring. From now on, tell people that you came off stage, and I was in a parking lot, and I stole some material from you, and you beat the hell out of me in the parking lot. I said, now, why would I tell that story? He said, because it's a better story. Dave, you had 30 million fans. I don't want them shooting at me coming down the city. He said, it's still a better story, and that's the way we should tell it. 2 weeks later, he called me, and he said, do you know the governor of Illinois? And I said, no, I met him, but I don't know him. But I do know the majority leader, John Cullerton. And he said, well, a friend of mine, and he told this story that his wife's girlfriend has a grown son who has autism, and they had a plot of land in Illinois that the autistic adults were planting corn and beans and stuff like that. And when it came into fruition, they were giving it away to the homeless, and the state was going to take that property away or something. What could he talk to somebody that could help? Dave wanted to help. So I called John Cullerton, and John said, oh, Tom, we're working on that right now. It's going to be fine. I said, would you mind talking to my friend Dave Letterman and telling him about it? He said, no, give him my number. And I said, oh, John, do me a favor. When you talk to Dave, tell him the only reason you're helping him is because you feel bad about Dreesen beating the hell out of him in the parking lot of the Comedy. He said, okay. Now, so 10 minutes go by, and my phone rings. I said, hello, and it's Letterman. He said, didn't I tell you that's a better story? I told you that's a better story.
I love Letterman. I just love him. And I love you, Tom. This is great. Thank you for coming on the air. So many wonderful stories. Every single time I have you on, you tell me a new story about Sinatra or your life or David Letterman or, you know, hanging out here in Chicago. You can go to themanwhomadesinatralaugh.com. He will be performing. He'll be taking your questions, and he'll be on Zoom on Saturday, May 9th. And you're a great follow, by the way, on Instagram. This is the way I found out about it, because I follow you on Instagram.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I won't be doing a show. I won't be performing. I'll be telling stories. But
telling
I guess that's
stories.
Performing.
Right.
So I'll be performing.
Yes, you're a great storyteller. Tom Dreesen. Tom, you're the best. We'll talk soon.
Pete, I'm coming to Chicago in June to celebrate my book, Still Standing, My Journey from Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. The book is coming out June 9th. I'll be coming on your show in June.
I love that. We'll see you then after the self-quarantine, Tom, okay?
Okay, buddy. Take care.
All right. That is Tom Dreesen, everybody. Just salt of the earth. What a great guy.